In February 2022, I published a video titled Shedding, Vaccines and Graphene Machines. At that time, there was huge interest in what was in the COVID-19 jabs and what effects they may have on the recipients. It was pretty clear that the injections were toxic. What was and is less clear is the exact mechanisms through which they maim and kill. Additionally, an issue that has been bandied around since 2021 is the concept of shedding. That is, the COVID-vaccinated somehow passing some of the injected mRNA or an expressed spike protein onto the unvaccinated to cause them to become unwell. While Peter McCulloch did some great work in 2021 warning the public not to take COVID jabs, unfortunately in 2022, he was increasingly defending the virologists' pseudoscientific practices and supporting fictional gain-of-function narratives. Now he's back promoting more fear porn in the form of the unvaccinated being at risk from alleged shedding. Let's have a look at the state of the scientific evidence and see how this narrative actually stems from the mainstream and from well before 2021. Whenever we critique another member of the so-called freedom community, there is always a few emails or responses expressing concern, suggesting that it is divisive. And we've seen some prominent individuals, such as Dale Bigtree, suggest that calling out the scientific inconsistencies of virology and germ theory is something that the general public is not yet ready for, or it is the wrong strategy. We take a different approach and do not have any reason to censor information that comes into our possession. We research topics to the fullest extent we know how and then release our findings directly to the public so they can decide what to do with the information. We are not restricted by regulatory bodies or employed by any companies or institutions. We speak freely and without fear of repercussions as we move closer to the establishing facts. And while most of the time we critique claims from establishment individuals and their institutions, we will also comment on anyone who we believe is causing confusion or promoting unsubstantiated fear-based narratives. When Peter McCulloch started speaking out about the COVID-19 vaccines in 2021, we were happy to share and promote his work. We realised that although he was fairly embedded in establishment allopathic medicine, he had quickly woken up to the fraud of the vaccines, in particular the plan to inject the whole population with experimental products.
There are people or stakeholders, they do want a needle in every arm. This needle in every arm is a very important moniker. Why?
However, in 2022, Dr. McCulloch decided to make public comments about those of us who take the no-virus position. He has embarrassed himself several times with his lack of knowledge of virology and ignorance as to how developed the critiques of the virus model are. It seems highly unlikely that he has taken the time to read the Perth Group's HIV, A Virus Like No Other, or my husband Mark's treatise, A Farewell to Virology. If he has read them, then he has certainly made no attempt to refute the arguments put forward in such papers. In November 2022, Dr. McCulloch published an article with the title Electron Cryotomography of SARS-CoV-2 Variants: Seeing the Virus Up Close Makes It Difficult to Deny Its Existence. He posted electron microscopy images of what he, like the publishing authors, said were SARS-CoV-2 variants. Those of us familiar with the pseudoscientific practices of the virologists went straight to the methods section to expose the fallacious claims. Here, the circular reasoning was on full display, where they claimed they had viruses because the samples they started the experiment with were also claimed to contain viruses. The quote viral growth section involved observing cytopathic effects in monkey kidney cell cultures. Following this, the mixed brew was magically, quote, purified by centrifugation and then taken for electron microscopy. The particles in these images were claimed to be virions, even though A, their biochemical composition was not determined outside of speculation, B, they were not shown to be replication competent, and C, they were not shown to be infectious or disease-causing. In other words, there was no evidence that they had found virions at all. However, Dr. McCulloch stated in his article that, quote, "Laboratory methods in virology are well accepted and utilize a series of experiments to demonstrate cellular invasion, replication, transfer, and repeated infection." We would point out that well accepted does not equate to scientific validity. For example, would Dr. McCulloch have to concede that the COVID-19 injections are well accepted because the majority of doctors went along with them? And with regard to his assertions about alleged particles replicating and causing infections, which part of these experiments consist of suitable methodologies to establish such specific claims? There were several other problems with the material in his article, and you can see further analysis of this in my post. Dr. Peter McCulloch says he has seen a picture of a virus up close. On the 2nd of June 2023, a piece was published on the wellness company's website titled "Dr. Peter McCulloch, Understand Spike Shedding Before It's Too Late." The piece appears to be mostly about product placement and leads to a US $66 per bottle product called Spike Support Formula, which at the bottle's recommended dose would last for 2 weeks. The product is sold by the wellness company, and Dr. McCulloch is a member of their chief medical board. The article suggests that the product will protect people from shedded particles that may be emanating from the COVID vaccinated. The main reference for the article was a November 2022 article titled "Health of Pure Bloods Threatened by Shedding of mRNA and Spike Protein," also authored by Dr. McCulloch. I'll make it clear that I don't have a problem with Peter personally, and he seems to have a good heart. However, I can't stand by knowing that people have put their trust in him and will take on board his ideas and advice. Before we dissect the article, we need to establish the limits of the science when it comes to the spike protein. There has been some confusion amongst no-virus individuals who concluded that if SARS-CoV-2 and coronaviruses don't exist, then neither can spike proteins. Our research indicates that a class of proteins that have been given the name spike do exist and have been detected for decades. However, they have never been shown to be part of any viruses. Like alleged viral genomes, their provenance is the issue. For example, we have analyzed papers such as this one, published in the Journal of General Virology in 1990. In their cell culture experiments, they describe a 4,089 nucleotide sequence coding for a protein that is 1,363 amino acids in length. Variations of such sequences have also appeared in many patent filings, including this one, filed by Ralph Barrick and company from UNC Chapel Hill in 2015. All traps for young players, because there is no evidence in these papers or patent filings that what they are calling spike proteins come from viruses. As we have pointed out many times, all the publications they rely on have insufficient methodologies to demonstrate the existence of viruses and or do not follow the scientific method. At most, they can say that they identify these proteins in some conditions of cellular breakdown. The next issue is whether the injected mRNA sequences that code for a spike protein actually result in the production of the protein inside the recipients. Despite manufacturers such as Moderna and individuals such as Peter McCulloch claiming that it does, as far as we have seen, there are no direct tests for a spike protein. They rely on antibody assays, which opens a can of worms with regards to specificity in the clinical setting. In any case, even if the specificity was 100%, such molecular detection techniques alone are insufficient to determine the cause of detectable proteins. All very interesting, but this does not require more attention for the purposes of the shedding discussion. In Peter's Wellness Company article, he wrote that, with regard to the vaccinated, Furtick et al. Have shown that mRNA is circulatory in blood for at least 2 weeks, with no reduction in concentration out to that time point. That may be so, but it does not mean that a spike protein has been expressed. To me, the most concerning finding is that mRNA usually has a very short lifespan in the body, but this synthetic stuff is resisting breakdown for weeks on end. Dr. McCulloch continues, likewise, Hannah et al. Have found mRNA within breast milk. Less data exists on spike protein shedding, but it is not a far stretch to understand this is well within the realm of reality. No, that is a huge stretch. What quote data exists on spike protein shedding? We certainly haven't seen any, but would like to see it if Peter can provide the citations. And synthetic mRNA in the breast milk doesn't mean that any protein expression would result in the baby as the RNA molecules are going into its gut, not being injected. Next, Dr. McCulloch states, the pivotal questions are, 1. For how long is a recently vaccinated person at risk to shed onto others? 2. Can shed mRNA be taken up by the recipient and begin to produce spike protein just like vaccination? 3. Can shed spike protein cause disease as it does in the vaccinated, e.g. myocarditis, blood clots, etc.? Why would we have any reason to believe that these are the pivotal questions? And he has worded the questions in a way that portrays shedding as an established phenomenon. Apparently, all that needs to be clarified is how much effect it has on other people. Let's go back a year and a half in time to see what I said about shedding then. But can these spike proteins shed from the bodies of the injected and affect another person? My supporter mentioned that shedding of particles seems to be a valid concept as it can occur with things like body odor. This is true in that the sweat glands secrete various compounds, including proteins, which can mix with skin organisms and the resulting particles aerosol so that other people can smell them. The secretions themselves could also come into direct contact with another person. However, I don't believe this puts another person at significant risk from any potential spike proteins. Proteins coming into contact with intact skin are not going to be able to get in, and proteins are generally broken down rapidly if they are swallowed or inhaled. Another question was whether Pfizer admitted that there was some risk of shedding from recipients due to the way their original clinical trial protocol was written. For example, under section 8.3.5, there are clauses stating environmental exposure may occur if a male family member or healthcare provider who has been exposed to the study intervention by inhalation or skin contact then exposes his female partner prior to or around the time of conception. It goes on to say that in the case of a live birth, the structural integrity of the neonate can be assessed at the time of birth. In the event of a termination, the structural integrity of the terminated fetus should be assessed by gross visual inspection. For a start, this is not unusual in a clinical trial involving an experimental product, and usually contraceptive requirements are very tight. In any case, it relates to potential direct exposure to the product or its effects to the unborn baby rather than transmission through a shedding mechanism. One of the reasons I did not find it plausible that spike protein shedding could significantly affect other people is that we expose the lack of evidence that proteins can be infectious in Chapter 5 of Virus Mania, which we titled BSE, the epidemic that never was. In 1987, Stanley Prusiner put forward his theory of infectious proteins, known as prions, being responsible for spongiform brain diseases such as mad cow disease. Despite all the excitement and senseless slaughter of animals that it caused, the model was never demonstrated to be relevant in nature. Experiments involving injecting protein mixtures directly into animals' brains can hardly be said to be a representation of what happens in natural settings. Like the virus theory, the required evidence is conspicuously absent. Of course, there are particular scenarios where transmission will occur, and the most obvious is that of unborn babies whose mothers are producing spike proteins. In fact, everything that has been injected into the mother is potentially going into the fetus or embryo, and that includes the spike protein, the mRNA coding sequence, the lipid nanoparticles, and the undeclared constituents that we'll get into soon.
If the FDA and Pfizer don't release the data on the clinical trials, I'm assuming fraud. If there is fraud and it comes out and we need whistleblowers and it's looking more and more apparent that this product is deadly.
Nothing has changed since then, and there remains no evidence that nucleic acids and proteins are contagious entities that shed from one person to make another sick. For those of us that can see there is no scientific evidence for the existence of viruses, and on a wider front, the existence of pathogens, full stop, the intricate details concerning mechanisms of harm from vaccines is of secondary importance. It is downstream of the fact that every vaccine in history has been a fraud, not just the death-dealing COVID shots. Nobody should take any vaccine unless they understand that it is a game of Russian roulette. The COVID injections are particularly nasty due to their combination of lipid nanoparticles, synthetic RNA, polyethylene glycol, with some batches possibly containing other undeclared constituents such as graphene. My Virus Mania co-author, Dr. Stefano Scoglio, succinctly described them as toxic bombs because the shots are full of pro-inflammatory compounds which can wreak havoc with many systems in the body. But the damage is limited to the recipients, plus or minus unborn children when it comes to pregnant women. Shedding is not supported by the scientific literature and is in fact an old mainstream ideology that stems directly from germ theory. Wikipedia has a page titled Viral Shedding, which states that vaccine shedding is a form of viral shedding, which can occur in instances of infection caused by some attenuated or live virus vaccines. And by viral shedding, they mean infection and contagiousness. The vaccine shedding page goes on to state that, with the exception of the oral polio vaccine, there have been no documented cases of vaccine-induced viral shedding that has infected contacts of a person vaccinated with an attenuated live virus vaccine. In other words, the mainstream has been claiming for decades that vaccine shedding is possible. However, we know polio has nothing to do with an imagined virus, as we covered extensively in Virus Mania and my video featuring F. William Endale's brilliant essay exposing the virus myth, Toxicology versus Virology, Rockefeller Institute and the Criminal Polio Fraud. The scientific literature concerning alleged vaccine shedding continues the pseudoscientific practices of virology. For example, this 2013 paper in the Journal of Infectious Diseases claimed to be detecting shedding in some recipients of the oral polio vaccine. Straight to the method section, where we read that stool underwent RNA extraction, reverse transcription, and real-time polymerase chain reaction to look for vaccine poliovirus serotypes 1, 2, and 3, and their revertant forms. What a load of poop! They are not detecting viruses, simply RNA sequences by PCR amplification. RNA sequences that have never been shown to be viral in nature, but are claimed to be so ever since they were fraudulently classified as such on genetic databases. People may still claim that the COVID-19 injections are different than all previous vaccines and have a special mechanism of shedding, but like Dr. McCulloch, they have nothing but speculation. In this regard, it doesn't matter whether the injected synthetic mRNA persists for weeks or a spike protein is even produced, because like all vaccines, the toxicity is limited to the recipients. There is no danger being around the vaccinated, apart from perhaps frustration that even a 10,000 volt shock is unlikely to wake them up. There is no need for more fear narratives that also play straight back into the hands of the perpetrators of these scams and lend support to the scientifically falsified concepts of contagion, so-called germ theory, the prion hypothesis, and the virus model. They are all distractions from how good health is achieved through right living with diet, exercise, right thinking, and a spiritual connection. I hope that you can continue to share this journey with us as we dissect the science going back to the original sources. It's a process that has led us to refute most of our medical training and embrace a new health paradigm that is pro-life and free of fear. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com